It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. Hi there, Bill.
Hi, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, the importance of understanding tax residency is what we're going to be talking about today. How clear is it on where you are a tax resident? Do you find that many people get it wrong sometimes?
I think there is... generally speaking, I think there's an awareness of what being a non-resident of the UK or being a tax resident of Spain or France or Portugal means. But unfortunately, the detail, and the devil is always in the detail is such that most of the time I get a description of what non-residents of the UK or residents of an overseas country means from an individual who isn't, as it were, in the business, there is, generally speaking, more often than not, a misconception at one level or another. And that isn't meant to be derogatory. It's simply that it's a complex subject. And, you know, I'm in the business and so are the tax advisory people within Blevins Franks. I don't expect, you know, people who've been in different industries to have a detailed awareness of tax residence. I mean, establishing, you know, where you are resident is... for tax purposes is complex, and that frankly is the end of it. I mean, it's much more complex than you think, although it is summarised by many people as being, well, don't spend more than 90 days in the UK, and nights in the UK, don't stay more than 182 days a year. But if you spend time in Spain and you do travel backwards and forwards to the UK, you've got to be very careful. It's important to get it right at the beginning, early on, so that you can make sure you're properly registered and that you are paying the right taxes in the right country. Very often we find with individuals they haven't got that right, and sorting the problems out later always, of course, proves to be more complex and more costly. You need to be certain about where you are tax resident before you can actually put an effective tax planning arrangement into place, obviously. It is surprising how many people I meet who are actually paying their tax and they think they've got it right, but they're paying tax in the wrong country. I mean, some people think they're not liable to taxes in Spain and France when they think they are. Others believe they're resident in Spain or France when they're actually tax resident elsewhere. And sometimes there is an intentional avoidance of understanding because others are often trying to use the rules to their own advantage, but end up getting it wrong. And of course, with the introduction of automatic information exchange, and particularly the new global agreement under the Common Reporting Standard, it is absolutely essential that you get it right as to where you're tax resident and pay your taxes accordingly. The job that Blevins Franks has with you as the client, the listener of this programme, is to sit down and talk about how we legitimately minimise to the lowest possible level, down to zero in some cases, the tax that you will pay on your wealth. But for peace of mind, you've got to make sure now that your affairs are in order, you know, sooner rather than later. The days, Howard, of El Portador checks in Spain and passing cash over, whilst it's still, I know, a cash system at many levels, the general tax compliance required of individuals now is under scrutiny, and to be caught is to be severely punished.
Yeah. An example of that, Bill, a headline case recently concerning the pop star Shakira that shows how expensive getting your tax residency wrong can be. While this was about Spain, I think it could happen in any other countries too, like France. So what happened exactly?
Well, you're right, Howard. Just getting my head around this one. Of course, she's an enormously popular, famous, and as a consequence, wealthy singer. And even though this is a high-profile case, scaled down, it can apply to someone with a very small amount of wealth by comparison to Shakira. I mean, most of us can only dream of the earnings on the level of this fantastic Colombian singer. But it is a good example, as you suggest, of the risks of getting your tax residence wrong. According to the reports I've read, Shakira has already paid over 20 million in tax to the Spanish tax authorities after they ruled that she was resident in Spain in 2011. Now that's, 7 years ago. This means she's got to pay Spanish tax on her worldwide income for that year. And according to the newspaper El Periódico, she paid the tax bill only so as to enable her to lodge an appeal against that tax bill. She's still under investigation for the following following 3 years, 2012 through to 2014, She became resident officially. She had announced and declared herself as a resident of Spain in 2015. And she has said that she thought she was non-resident for the years from 2011 to 2014 and therefore only liable for tax on the income that she actually generated in Spain. She said she spent most of her time outside of Spain, that her tax residency was in fact in the Bahamas during those years. However, when the tax authority started to investigate, they determined that she was de facto a resident of Spain for the year she claims to have been a non-resident, because the investigation included interviews with her neighbours, her hairdresser, her insurance companies, her health insurance people. They even talked to her partner since 2010 and the father of her children. He's the FC Barcelona footballer, Gerald Piqué. The children were born in 2013 and 2015. But that investigation looked at lots of issues, the electricity account, the telephone account of her personal property. Now, the case is still ongoing. As I say, she has, it's reported, appealed against it. And so the final result could change. But it sort of demonstrates, wherever you are, why it's important to get specialist advice and make sure you get your tax residence right before they come along and tell you you got it wrong and you have to pay fortunes in fines and penalties and late taxes. I wish Kira had come to Blevins Franks some time ago. I would have loved to have met her.
For all sorts of reasons. Now, let's...
Steady.
Let's look at UK residence tax, because that's what most of our listeners be interested in. As this can continue to affect expatriates here, can you provide a brief summary of how UK residence tax, the test, works?
Yeah, well, this came about, Howard, because until a few years ago, there was no statutory UK definition of what residence was and what non-residence required of you as a British person. There was a booklet called IR20, which was a guidance booklet for individuals who were concerned to set their lives up properly to be non-resident. But there was a test, it wasn't intended to be a test case, but it turned out to be a celebrated test case. Mr. Gaines Cooper, who claimed to be non-resident and indeed non-domicile of the UK and a resident of the Seychelles, was deemed by a tribunal at that time, or by the special commissioners actually, to be a resident of the UK, even though he met all of the indications set down in this guidance booklet. And there was outrage, uproar. Why? Because he'd met all of those conditions. He'd met all of those guidelines. But what the revenue claim was and what the commissioner supported was that he'd used the rules to his best advantage and against the revenue. He was playing with them. 90 days absolutely on the dot every year he spent in the UK. He had property in the UK, wife in the UK, kids in the UK, kids at school in the UK, a shotgun license in the UK, a shooting club, motor cars. And so he used the rules to his own advantage, and the special commissioner said, no, you don't spend a lot of time in the UK, but you are resident here, so you've got to pay tax. And he had to pay tax. Now, as a result of the uproar, the law has been changed to now introduce a statutory residence test. Now, I want to warn you that when laws are set down in statute, they appear to be something you can suddenly hang your cap on and be confident about. Well, I'm not sure that that is the case. I think the statutory residence test is a massive step forward, and I hope it will become entirely dependable. But, you know, there haven't been any court cases to test this yet. And law and the application of law is made on two fronts, statute and case precedent. And there have been no cases precedent to test whether this statutory test, if you stick to it, is enough to keep you out of the UK tax net. There are three levels of test. One is the automatic overseas test, where you're treated as a non-resident of the UK if you meet any one of the three key conditions of that test. There's an automatic residence test, where you're deemed to be a resident in the UK if you meet any one of three conditions under that test. But of most interest, there is a third test called the sufficient ties test. Now, if your residence position hasn't been determined under the first two tests, you then have to take the next step to consider your connections to the UK. And there are five key areas. Your family. Do your spouse and or any minor children reside in the UK? Accommodation. Is it available to you for more than 91 continuous days, even if you only spend one night there? Do you work in the UK for a minimum period of time? Do you make substantial visits spending 90 days or more in the UK? And so on. And the answer is that you have to go through this test, which looks simple, very carefully. It wasn't set down in statute to make it easy for you to avoid UK tax. It was set down, in my opinion, to give you a solid level of guidance, but answer these questions wrongly and you'll find yourself in the middle of a serious level of correspondence with HMRC. Blevins Franks have prepared a whole raft of notes concerning the statutory residence test, a whole explanation of it and how it works, including a very useful flowchart. And if you go to the Blevins Franks website, which I'll mention at the end of the broadcast, blevinsfranks.com, I'll mention it again then, you could contact your local Blevins Franks office and tell them you've been listening to this broadcast about the statutory residence test and ask them for the information. I'm pretty sure they'll provide that to you willingly and either stick it in the post to you or send it to you by email.
Moving on to Spain then, Bill, what are the criteria that make you resident for tax purposes in Spain?
It's a fairly straightforward issue, Howard, really. If you spend more than 183 days in Spain in any calendar year, that's January 1st to December 31st, whether or not you're formally registered, and the days are cumulative, so they don't have to be consecutive. You can spend 3 months and go away for a month, come back for 3 months and go away for a month, come back for a month. You're already resident at the point in time you pass 183 cumulative days. If you, secondly, have your centre of economic interest in Spain, that is where Spain is the base, if you like, for your professional economic activities in Spain. If you earn more income from your activities in Spain or have more assets here than in any other single country, you will be deemed to be resident in Spain, even if you spend less than 183 days there. The third and final one is something that has been in the statute for a long time. It's a determination of where is your centre of vital interests. Where does your spouse live? Where do your dependent minor children live? If your wife lives in Spain and there's sufficient evidence to show that you spend a lot of time with your family, even if you spend less than 183 days in Spain, you will be deemed to be resident there unless you can prove otherwise.
Okay, so what taxes are you liable for as a resident of Spain?
In Spain, if you're a resident of Spain, unless you've done some serious tax planning, you're taxed on pretty much everything that moves and most of the stuff that doesn't. You're liable for income tax on your income, worldwide income, capital gains on your worldwide capital gains, wealth taxes on your worldwide income, and your assets are also subject to Spanish succession and gift tax rules, which are considerably different to those in the UK. And that is in addition, of course, to incidental tax liabilities such as IVA and any other local taxes. If you are a resident of Spain, of course, you may also have to submit that declaration of assets of those items located outside of Spain on the now famed Modelo 720, where your asset value exceeds 50,000 in a particular asset class. You have to make an annual declaration and thereafter declarations where there are significant changes. It's a subject beyond this discussion, but it's also a nuisance every year, but nonetheless, that's how it is.
And what happens, I suppose, in the worst case scenario that you meet the criteria for both Spain and the UK?
Yeah, that's true. Lots of people do actually meet the criteria. You'd be surprised how many people, because of the manner in which they live their lives, in most cases accidentally end up being resident of both countries during the same period. Now, it is clearly possible to fulfil the domestic tax residency rules of both Spain and the UK. And in that case, and that's the reason why, the double taxation agreement exists, because that will set out a sort of a checklist, a tiebreaker, if you like, to establish in which country the individual should be paying which taxes and for what reason. The tax treaty is meant to be there, so you aren't taxed twice on the same income or gains. They look at the criteria like the location of a permanent home, the centre of your vital interest where your family are domiciled, and your habitual abode. Where do you return to? Where do you keep all of your clothes? Where do you insure your property? Where do you take your health insurance? They're all evidence of where you think you belong. Now, if they don't determine your residency, it will eventually default to nationality. That's rare. Usually the checks and balances and the tiebreaker work out fairly clearly where you're resident for tax. And as I say, even the best of intentioned individuals who have studied it at one level end up having a slightly misconstrued understanding of exactly what non-residence and residence means.
Yeah. And finally, Bill, how strict are the Spanish authorities when it comes to tax residents?
Oh, they are increasingly strict. I mean, Howard, you and I go back a very long way where strict and Spanish taxation was an oxymoron. They just weren't blood brothers. But of course, times have changed. Spain is now a full-blooded member of the EU. It's gone through a very good recovery, I have to say, from the economic crisis of 2008. But it has learnt the lesson that you can collect taxes and you can thereby generate and improve your economy in accordance with the laws of the land. I mean, some of the experiences I've heard of recently from Spanish tax advisors, when I was talking to them about the incidents that they had of tax investigations or audits, if you like, the points of crisis for a tax audit on an individual will always crop up when an individual records a death in Spain. When there's a declaration of a death in Spain, the tax authorities immediately start to look at the estate because it's generally speaking a point in time at which they may be able to collect some money. Where you take part as an individual in a fairly significant financial transaction, when you buy or sell a larger property or where you buy or sell a substantial business, that will definitely invoke an audit. If you move to a tax jurisdiction where from Spain there is a known tax break, Portugal, for example, then that will engage an audit on your Spanish assets and they'll be seeking to see if there's tax to collect. Any changes really in your tax residency status in general will attract an audit. But under the Common Reporting Standard, it's becoming much more simple because under the Common Reporting Standard, by the end of this year, over 100 countries will be reporting automatically without request the information on your financial affairs. If you've got several bank accounts and several investment institutions, there will be a collation of that information, if that's a word. The information will be collated to a central source in your country of residence, Spain, say, and they will know from automatic information exchange what it is you've got. Remember, Modelo 720 doesn't really engage you in having to pay any tax. It's really an asset tracking device. You list your assets worldwide on the Modelo 720, and then you make changes of any significance at each subsequent year. And it is a means of simply knowing where your assets are at any particular point in time, so that when the time comes that there is an opportunity to collect tax, the Hacienda will know pretty much how much they're going to get and for what reason.
Yeah. Bill, the best way to get in touch with you is, of course, through the website. Remind us about that.
Yeah, the website is at www.blevinsfranks.com. As I say, we do have a printed document and a very interesting flowchart concerning the statutory residence test. And I would encourage you, even if you think you know all the rules regarding residence now, as I explained, the devil is in the detail. Why don't you phone the local office from identifying the local office to you via the website? And tell them you've listened to this radio and you'd like a copy of the statutory residence test, and then you'll get information that you can rely upon.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll talk again at the same time next week.
It's a great pleasure, Howard. Have a good week.